You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, July 15th, 2009. This is episode 84, Teens, Tech, and Trek. We are back again with another edition of the Wells Tech Podcast, and we have a crowded virtual podcast this morning. Normally, just me and Sally, where we plug in an interview, but it's not just me and Sally this morning. Sally is here. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin.
And we have two visitors in the luxurious offices of the Wells Tech Podcast studio, and that's Joel Nelson and Jeremy Bakken from the Commission on Youth Discipleship. Welcome, guys.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having us.
We are talking about, obviously, youth and a specific focus on technology, and just coming off the heels of the Wells International Youth Rally, we thought it would be great to have Joel and Jeremy back, because I think both of you have been on before, or just Joel, or just Jeremy?
I've been on before.
Okay.
Yeah, I have not.
Joel's a first-timer. Okay. But he's not a... He's accustomed to the podcast arena because you do a regular podcast called, does it have a name?
Oh, we don't really have a name for it. It's just a podcast on parentscrosslink.net.
Okay. Okay. So he's not sweating this too much, in other words. But really appreciate it. You guys just had a heavy-duty week last week out in Ames, Iowa, right?
We did the 2009 International Youth Rally in Ames, a little over 1,400 participants. About 1,000 of those were teenagers. The rest of those were adults, and had a very good time. It was a good rally and good weather, and I think while it's a very exciting thing, it's also kind of nice to have it over now.
Good thing it only comes every other year, right?
That's right.
My husband was there with my teenage son and several others from our congregation, and he made an announcement after church on Sunday, something to the effect of, I now know that I'm not a teenager anymore. Missed a lot of sleep. He climbed a rock wall, and I think he was feeling it, you know.
Sure. Well, good.
Yeah, and I had two of my family members there. My son was there, who was there with Campus Ministries. He's a student at UWM here in Milwaukee. And my daughter, who is going to be a sophomore at Luther Prep, was at her first youth rally. So that was exciting for her. My oldest daughter was actually just married last Sunday, had been to a couple youth rallies. In fact, I think she was at the one that was at Ames the last time. So she was able to give my youngest a lot of tips and came back with just glowing thoughts on, you know, just the experience. And I think that's probably pretty typical of the youth that go, that's why it's such a popular thing.
I think the young people really appreciate it. The leaders do. I was going to ask about your daughter. Did she meet her husband at a youth rally? Because that sometimes
happens. No, I can't give you that. I can't give you that that marketing testimonial. But
in fact, at my first youth rally in 2003 at Estes Park in Colorado, we had a guy propose to his wife at the rally. They kind of arranged a slot for them to do that. They were leaders, obviously.
Right. Right. Kidding. That was the other youth rally my oldest daughter had been at. But no, she actually met her husband at WLC.
Excellent.
It was a neat experience, too. So so what were your roles there? You were kind of chief cook and bottle washer, I assume, there. But through it's a year-long planning process, or maybe even longer?
Actually longer, 2 years in the making. I think we started November of 2007, and several meetings. We have teen members that are nominated and then are selected to be on the committee. And we work together as a rally committee. There are four adults and then the three teenagers to plan the whole rally. And then at the rally itself, each of us kind of has different roles and responsibilities. We do have a somewhat full-time rally coordinator, Chris Snyder, who does a lot of the legwork behind the scenes and then kind of troubleshoots things during the rally. But then I'm kind of responsible for all the programming aspects. Jeremy, obviously, with the registration, and then he did all the worship things and coordinated all the music and led the rehearsals for all of that stuff. One of the other members, Rich Warnicki, is kind of in charge with ground operations and security.
Mm-hmm.
So we have it divided up pretty well.
With all those folks, and there's certainly an expectation, I think, of youth today that technology would play a big part in any kind of rally like this. Let's talk a little bit about just the rally and the use of technology in it. I assume you had, you know, pretty good AV there. I know when I picked up my daughter back when it was there at Ames, they have a nice auditorium, big screen in the front, and so I assume you make good use of that in videos as well.
Right. Maybe we could start by talking about some of the things we did pre-rally and then move in. I mean, Jeremy could talk to us about our online registration process and some of the things
that's got to be a huge thing, right, to try and register that many kids.
Yeah.
Plus all of the other things that you have to register for.
Right, exactly. I mean, the registration process itself, when you look at each bit of information that we need for each individual attending the rally, it's well over 100 different pieces of information. It's a lot easier to collect all those online rather than the way it has been done in the past, which is with paper forms, which then have to be entered into a database manually. So, and it's just what people expect these days. They expect to be able to do things online, to be able to provide information online, to pay online. And so we've developed a process beginning with the 2007 rally where an entire group can be pre-registered, so we have our numbers well ahead of the rally, and then the individuals can complete their registration as they have time, as it fits into their schedule. And they don't have to, on the church end, they don't have to be collecting all this stuff together and sending it in all at once. Each of the individuals can kind of do it at a more convenient pace for themselves. And then we also are able to collect all the funds up front, which makes us it's easier for us to program things and pay for them in real time rather than running a debt until the rally.
Well, I can't even imagine doing something on this scale without technology involved, where it's just a paper submittal process, the mail
either,
or whatever, or fax, or however it was done in the past, right?
Yeah, and this rally, having 1,400, is the lowest attended international youth rally. When we had the highest attended one, 3,100 people in Orlando, we did that all with paper. That was the year before we went online, and
that put you over the edge.
That was not fun.
Okay. So beyond registration, then, anything else before the rally where technology was an assist?
Well, we have a website, which this year we made part of our Living Bold website, and the URL still works, wellsyouthrally.net, and we have post-rally information on that site now. So the goal was to have everybody get their information at that spot. We also made use of an email news service and encouraged our leaders to sign up for that. And anytime we wanted to communicate with them, rather than sending out a mass email, we would post a rally news item, and that would then go to them automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And it's archived there for anybody to go back and look at. We did a lot of other communicating via email and via the website before the rally. We posted as many links and documents and things as we could on the website. We distributed all the music electronically via email to everybody so they could practice ahead of time. We coordinated service projects with everybody. We had to have special waivers signed for all of that, so
right.
We did a lot of that via email as well. Just the ability to get stuff in people's hands immediately rather than having to wait for it to arrive via surface mail or something like that.
Yep, absolutely. My wife, who's one of the harshest critics of Wells.net, although she doesn't actually listen to the podcast, although I encourage her, so I can talk about her a little bit. Maybe if I talked about her more, she'd listen more. But she, being one of the harshest critics of Wells.net, I really had only praise to give for the whole registration process. She thought it just was so simple and so straightforward this year that it really made life easier. And I know in the past it's just been a challenge to kind of, all these moving parts are hard to coordinate.
Yes.
But she had a really pleasant experience with just getting our daughter registered, and then just kind of a comfort level that things were captured and the confirmations and everything else like that. So it was a great job.
With this being our second time doing the online registration, I mean, we've Jeremy has learned some better mm-hmm. ways to do things, and we've tried to raise the bar a little bit with the whole process. So I think right. we've hopefully are improving, providing
better service.
I would assume
lower attendance probably is, you know, due to, you know, a lot of different circumstances, maybe location, but also economy, you know, whatever. Where is it in 2 years now?
We haven't decided that yet. Some of that is due to the fact that we, since we've been appointing teenagers to the committee, we won't have them appointed until probably September or October, so mm-hmm. we don't want to start planning without them being involved. And just since I've been involved and since we have been really raising the bar with the rally, there's so much that goes on to get the current rally done that
right.
any thinking of the next one is just not on the radar screen.
So moving on to the technology during the rally, I know I was signed up for those email newsletters, and I got one after that first opening worship, I believe, where you had made use of some video during the worship process or something like that. Can you
sure.
tell us a little bit about that?
Actually, there were 41 different pieces of PowerPoint or video that we wove into the rally. Every presenter was encouraged to use technology in their presentations, whether they were a keynote speaker or the worship leaders, and all but one of them did. Our closing worship leader didn't use any PowerPoint or anything. Mm-hmm. But so we had 41 different PowerPoints and video brought in. Several Wells entities provided us with short commercials that we played, video commercials. So we used that form of technology quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. We incorporated some of our previously produced video. We used some of our everyday videos from the Living Bold website at various points throughout the rally for morning worship, and morning devotion worship, and also for the closing program.
Yeah, my daughter referenced one in particular from the Walk in My World series, I think, that Joe Holtmuth did.
Too.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
Okay.
We had our theme was Follow the Path, Lead the Way, and based on the Bible passage that talks about, you know, no one looking down on you because you are young, but set an example for the believers in speech and life and faith and in service. No.
Love.
So we had four parts to that, and we had two keynote speakers, actual people doing it, and then we used two of the Walk in My World videos as the other two
mm-hmm.
Keynote presentations for variety and to add more technology and also kind of promote those resources. And then there were discussions after each of those. I think it went pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
And you had some television technology involved as well with your service projects. You got a little bit of positive media coverage there in the Des Moines area. Is that
right?
We did.
Yeah, and we probably could have had a little more. I had contacted all of the Des Moines TV outlets and news outlets there and told them about what we were doing. And at the rally, one of those station people contacted me, but they called my office phone number instead of my mm-hmm. cell phone number, and that message went into my email, mm-hmm. which I didn't check during the whole rally mm-hmm. because I just never got to it.
Right.
And we wound up, we could have probably had more coverage, but we at least got one good story out of it.
And it happened to be at the biggest location. We had over 400 teens at an arboretum doing various cleanup jobs. So it was I guess you might say, free publicity. And it's probably something that congregations don't always think about. Just all we did was let people know what we were doing, and mm-hmm. they picked it up and ran with it at the TV station. So.
Neat. So in your mind, where do you fit technology in our outreach or ministry to youth? Is it something that is hard to get a handle on? You know, technology obviously changes very quickly. In your minds, you know, what kind of attention do you need to pay to it, and how do you use it?
Well, I would just think in today's world with today's young people that if you're not trying to connect with them via some form of technology, you're going to miss the boat. They're so comfortable with it. They seem to really respond well to it. I think young people will share things with you via technology they wouldn't share with mm-hmm. you face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
Our Living Bold website, for example, we probably get you know, between 2 and 5 questions a week that come to us where young people are asking about things, which I don't think they would ask a live
right.
person face-to-face because of the challenges with that.
Mm-hmm.
So and helping congregations, helping leaders to realize and think of ways that they can use technology to promote more what they're doing, like some of the ways we've described here as we promoted the youth rally.
Do you think, in general, youth leaders get that message? You know, where do you see us in the kind of the evolution of youth leaders kind of getting with it and understanding that, boy, technology needs to play a part in their local youth ministries? I think you guys get it. You know, we do websites. You got Kids Connection. You got Living Bold, Parents Crosslink. Those are all making use of technology. But at least in my travels, I don't see, that level of commitment from our youth leaders, maybe because a lot of them are volunteers, obviously, and maybe they're not as up on technology, as maybe they could or need to be to have an effective youth ministry.
Yeah.
They're not on Facebook. They're not into text messaging. Those are two big ones, obviously, with youth.
Right. My response to that would be I think the use of technology is more a function of how active the youth ministry is. I think the youth ministries that are active are using technology.
It almost happens to the youth ministry because of the activity and the engagement of the youth.
I think there are more congregations that have a youth ministry presence or a special youth website. I think more of them are communicating with their teens via email and other things. Jeremy, what's your take on that?
Well, I was going to say it's somewhat a generational thing. I mean, I can see that by and large, the younger leaders, the leaders that are in their 20s and 30s leading a teen group, are more likely to communicate via email or to tackle doing a website or something like that. That's not always the case, but even in, say, like the registration process, there were times when an older leader might not be as comfortable with that as a younger leader. So that can play into it, too. It's kind of on an individual basis. If the leader is comfortable with it, then obviously it's going to be a bigger part of the ministry. If the leader's not as comfortable with it, then it probably won't be.
Right.
And from my perspective, just kind of reflecting on this topic and the youth ministry here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye, I think it's just an important thing to just be available in that digital space. The kids certainly are comfortable there, just like Joel was saying. And so having the communication channels there so that they can email or ask questions on a Facebook inbox or whatever, just opens up that connection with them. That's the way they're used to communicating. And if you're there, at least, you're a possibility when they need to ask a question about something strange their friend is doing or whatever. And the other angle of that is just providing them good media. Certainly the everyday video devotions are great media. I know I've heard from a couple of our kids that they've watched our live stream of our worship service when they can't attend worship. So that's really encouraging. They're comfortable in that digital space, so they're willing to take advantage of the media that we're producing there.
Our teens on the committee this time around even pushed for that a little more, and for the first time we had a MySpace page specifically dedicated to this rally. We have a Living Bold MySpace page, but we created a separate one for the youth rally, and that was purely the teens on the committee pushing for that, and they actually set it up initially. And so it's definitely where they're at, I think it's important for us to meet them where they're at. If we're not going into their territory where they feel comfortable talking about this kind of stuff, we're missing an opportunity.
I think, though, that we also do that with some understanding that the technology is maybe more the tool. At least that's my feeling about it. It's more the tool and doesn't always replace the actual ministry that needs to be done. I mean, there's still a great place for face-to-face interaction and teaching young people how to communicate with people face-to-face, that technology shouldn't become the only way that we're communicating and connecting young people with each other and with spiritual material. But it certainly is a very important way.
Do you think technology has somewhat become an addiction to the youth and how they communicate, that they'd much rather live within Facebook or live within their phone and their text messaging as opposed to, the traditional interaction that is still obviously vitally important to, to the fellowship component of our lives and how God has kind of wired us up and the ability to support each other that way. Do you see that as a growing problem in our churches and then in our youth groups?
Yeah, I think it slices both ways, Martin. I think, you know, if the teen years are the try-on years,
right,
where young people are experimenting with different identities and personas and whatever, technology, the virtual world, makes it much easier to try on a bunch of different things in a bunch of different ways.
Right.
And, you know, I think my daughter, who has a Facebook and a MySpace account, I think she has changed kind of her image out there a couple different times.
Right.
Positively, but yet, you know, you can just see that struggle that they go through to find out who they are is helped quite a bit by how you can do it technologically, and
right,
it's so easy, you know. But it is a very easy way for them to communicate, and young people today are supposed to be the most relational generation we've ever seen.
Right.
They can easily, quickly relate, maybe in quotes, with each other through technology. So it's something.
It'll be interesting to watch as this evolves and as they gravitate toward, you know, the newest things. And it's amazing how quickly these things catch on. Just in thinking of the adoption of texting, for instance, the adoption of something like Facebook, or who knows what it will be next, Twitter or whatever it is,
right?
And how they grab onto that, and boy, that's a struggle for people in ministry to kind of keep your eyes open and figure out how best to use these for ministry purposes, and outreach purposes,
and to keep up with it or even ahead of it.
Right.
I mean, even just we were talking with the teens on the committee before the rally started, when we arrived in Iowa, and even they, the two that pushed for having a MySpace account, they've now switched over to Facebook. And,
right,
you know, so we were making fun of them the whole time, talking about, what was it, MyFace and Spacebook, I think we were.
Right. Well, and they were texting each other all the time with such ease, and we were joking about that. And, you know, I sometimes think, though, that if adults penetrate that teen tech world too much, the teens will figure out a little different approach too, because the last thing a young person wants to be is like their parents or like the older people, so they're always going to be moving the target a little bit. And, you know, we as youth ministers want to try to get close and take advantage of that, but I don't think we should ever kid ourselves into thinking that we are going to ever be able to live in the teen world, because they're always going to move it a step away from us, because they don't want to be in our world for right now. It
took my youngest daughter months to accept me as a friend on Facebook. And my son's still a little freaked out about that as well, that I follow him on Twitter. So, so what in as CYD continues to provide services and tools, how do you help youth leaders at this point? What kind of tools, services in this area do you provide?
Well, we're certainly trying to continue to provide the web presence through our different websites. We're trying to provide more video content that can be used on the websites. You know, our newsletters have gone electronic.
Right.
I mean, those would be some of the main things. I can see us continuing to do that. Maybe we develop some better ways to get key youth leaders in our church body to interact with each other or communicate with us via some form of ongoing technology.
So how would a youth leader get connected with all that stuff? Where can they go?
Well, the websites that we have, everything's laid out pretty well on there. The most recent thing, of course, is the Everyday Video Series, and those are available on livingbold.net and also on streams.
Streams.wells.net.
Correct.
Great. And then you just do a search for and find those. There's quite a few of those.
Yeah, there's I think over 50 now. And when we post them to Living Bold, we kind of feature one each week on the homepage. We set up a discussion board for it.
Now, is that an ongoing thing, or are those all done, or what's the status?
They're in the second phase now.
Okay.
As we continue, it's completely grant funded, so as we continue to obtain grants for it, we'll keep doing them.
Okay.
There's no set limit to them at the moment, except for as long as the money's available,
right,
we'll do them.
Right. Those are awesome, though.
And
those
we did incorporate the production of those into the youth rally, the team that produces the everyday videos came, and they did some kind of person on the street interviews, asking some questions, just, you know, taking a person out of the crowd and asking them a question they're not prepared for, and just seeing what their response is. And according to them, we haven't seen any of that footage yet, but according to them, they got some really good stuff.
Oh, I would imagine. Yeah.
So that'll be a neat component to that, because that's a genre of that video that we haven't tackled yet. We've obviously got the skits that are kind of prepared. We've got the one-on-one interviews where we're talking about, you know, a topic or an issue that someone's gone through. Now we'll have these spontaneous response type things to include in the mix.
And your teens at that point are kind of primed to talk about spiritual issues, because that's what they've been doing.
Right,
know,
that's
the
what they're there for at a rally. Yeah,
exactly.
God willing, that's what they're there for.
I think you'd get some nice responses. So who's the primary audience for those videos? Is it strictly teens or parents or both?
Well, I think from our point of view, we wanted to have them speak to young people. But I think we found that other generations, a little bit older people, have also commented about their value.
Right.
And I think our plan is to eventually repurpose all of these into a standalone DVD, because congregations that have wanted to show them as sermon illustrations or whatever have had a little bit more of a challenge getting them off the web to do that. So we think there'll be a market for those videos in a different format. But I think they're being used by more than just young people.
Very neat. Joel, Jeremy, thank you very much for taking the time this morning to talk with us. And boy, good to have you back after, you know, the intense week that you had. So you don't look too much worse for the wear.
We're a couple days away from it already, so we've had a little time to recover.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
But thank you very much for talking to us about this important topic.
Blessings on your work. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Very good. We are on to the next segment of the podcast, and that is the New Technology Showcase. What are we looking at this week?
Well, Martin, this week I want to talk a little bit with our teachers in mind and share some smart board resources that I've come across recently. First up is a web page produced by PBS, Public Broadcasting System, and it's all kinds of games from their various websites put together, and the thing that they have in common is that they're great for interactive whiteboards. So it's an exhaustive list of games. There's language arts, there's math, social sciences, all of those represented there, and they're just really great, especially for the pre-K through 2 crowd, which is an area that I have trouble coming up with resources because they're non-readers. And so a lot of these things will be great resources that I can make use of in the computer lab, or that the teacher certainly could work into their everyday lesson planning. So check out the link for Smart Board Games from PBS. And then the other one is actually just a personal utilities page that somebody named Harvey developed. It's from Harvey's homepage, that's the website, and it's a list of teacher utilities that are also great for interactive whiteboards. And apparently Harvey is a math teacher who uses an interactive whiteboard, and he's built this really great website with a lot of the resources he uses and some that he's developed himself that he's sharing there. So you can download notebook files. I made use of the Wheel of Fortune file that he developed in yesterday's Whiz Kids Computer Camp. Our kickoff computer camp session was yesterday, and we played Wheel of Fortune, and the kids just loved it. They got to come up to the board and spin the big wheel, and we solved technology phrases on the Wheel of Fortune, and it was just a lot of fun. He's got a baseball game there. He's got a Jeopardy game there. You can drill on any topic, really. You fill in the questions or the terms or the phrases that that the kids are trying to solve, and so you can use these in just multiple ways in the classroom. So check out Harvey's homepage. We'll have a link to both of those smart board resources in our show notes.
Cool. Now, you dove right into the picks. I must have jumped. You were so eager to share that good stuff that we skipped the New Technology Showcase, which we can do if you want.
Yes, definitely.
And we can come back to my pick. So that'll give me a little bit more time to collect my thoughts on that, because it was one of those last minute, you know, I need a pick. Not that there aren't things that we can pull out of the bag here, but I wanted to talk a little bit about one of the biggest pieces of news this past week was a new operating system, right?
That's right. Google announced that they're going to be releasing their own Google Chrome operating system, which is basically a netbook kind of operating system, something that's really scaled back,
lightweight,
that's really
right?
designed to get you on the internet so that you can live in the cloud.
Yeah, this is an interesting announcement, and there's nothing in the immediate future. This, I think, is something even coming out next year, but they wanted to get the word out that they're working on this. And this is essentially an operating system that's totally based on cloud computing, where you load this up and you need the internet, and essentially you're doing your work online in true Google fashion. So this will be really interesting, and alongside that, Microsoft has just recently announced their new Office Online stuff. They've been doing online Office apps for a little bit, but nothing real seriously, and I think with what Microsoft is doing and what Google is doing, you know, all of this cloud-based stuff, it'll be really interesting to see how this all shakes out. I think, in general, that's good for us, that competition is good, and I think the ability for users to compute the way they want that makes the most sense is really what we'll find when we emerge from the other end of these operating system upgrades.
Right. As the two of them continue to up the ante, you know, Microsoft versus Google, we get the benefits. Mm-hmm. And what's neat about it is, you know, Google makes the announcement and immediately people are blogging about what I want to see in the Google
right.
Chrome operating system. And Google's listening to that. You got to know that that there's some ideas that they haven't hatched yet, and mm-hmm. that they're getting all this feedback and all this press from their announcement, and their operating system's just going to benefit from that.
Right, so. Absolutely. Now I can go to my pick. I think I'm ready.
Okay. I don't know if we've ever gotten it out of order before. And so there you go. That's my big mistake. We were looking for one.
We were looking for Sally's big mistake, and there it is. All right.
All right.
It wasn't so big, but we can classify it as such.
And I'm forgiven, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Well, it's up to our audience. So my pick is an iPhone app called AutoStitch. And it's basically a camera app that will stitch photos together to give these nice wide panoramic shots. You have the Touch, Sally. Does it have a camera?
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
So
I'm okay.
Really sad right now.
Because this app is really cool, and I've got an example of a photo that I took of my office with this tool. It's a $1.99 app for the iPhone, but basically you take a number of shots, just moving the camera slightly from left to right or right to left, however you want to do it, and you plug all of these into AutoStitch on the iPhone, and it melds them together very precisely. So it gives you this wide-angle shot of images. And I know when I'm taking pictures out in the field or whatever, there's a lot of times where it would be nice to get, and I don't have a wide-angle lens on my camera, on my SLR, to go widescreen on these, to go panoramic, to get the kind of the full visual of what you're seeing, because obviously our eyes are widescreen or panoramic, but the camera lens, not so much. So this does a nice job of doing that. You get some really nice photos this way. So I'll post a link to the photo that I took. There's also a Windows app that'll do this too, and I'll put a link to that as well. That's a paid-for app. It's called AutoPano, and I think it's from the UK, if I'm not mistaken. And the last I checked, it was like 99 euros, which, if my conversion rate is correct, that's about 140 US. But basically does the same thing. You throw a bunch of pictures at it, and you get this nice panoramic view. There's got to be Web 2.0 apps that do this too. Maybe some of our listeners are users of those. But panoramic photos are really neat.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, you know, about the power of what you're describing, this little practically credit card sized iPhone that you have, you know, can keep you connected to the world, and you can share real time, not just a picture, but a panoramic picture at that. You know, it's just amazing. And I guess the new iPhones have video capabilities as well. So you can share video, you know, in the cloud immediately. It's just, it's a amazing world we live in.
When I saw this iPhone app, one of the things I immediately thought of was a lot of our final websites are using a template that has a long vertical flash image at the top. If you go to peacehartford.org, you'll see one of those, and there's a bunch of other well sites that do that as well. Great use for this, to get those panoramic views of images that'll fit nicely in that long horizontal space, which is not always easy to fill.
No, and, you know, doing it even without any kind of photo editing, basically doing it right there on your iPhone and having something that's web ready, that's really powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And the camera on most phones is perfectly suitable for taking those kinds of images for web ready kinds of things. So very good. Those are our picks. Just check the Wells Tech website for all the links that we just talked about, and give us ideas. If you have things that you'd like us to try out and maybe talk about on the show, that would be great. And we get all kinds of community feedback, and that's our next segment, Sally. And again, we've got more than we could probably share at this point. So why don't you dive in? Tell us who's talking to us.
Yeah, it's great to hear from people. We had a couple of follow-up comments on our bonus Wells Tech Goodness podcast. We've been doing a summer series of simple how-to, and one of our podcasts was about adding Facebook pages for your congregation or organization, and there's even been some developments since we talked about it. The pages are brand new, and now you can actually add fan boxes to your website that connect to your pages. We have an example of one on our Wells Tech podcast sidebar now, where you can actually see our Facebook page there on the podcast show notes site. And Nancy Thompson from Victory of the Lamb in Franklin, Wisconsin, shared information. There's a Mashable blog post about it that gives you the rundown on how to make it happen and everything. And so check that out if you have a Facebook page. Maybe you want to include a sidebar or somewhere on your website feature that pulls in that Facebook page content into your regular website. Also, there was an announcement from MailChimp. MailChimp is an e-news service that you can use with your congregation or organization to push out e-newsletters. And now you can actually put a subscribe box on your Facebook page to have people subscribe to your e-newsletter. And MailChimp's detailed out the steps to make that happen in a blog post as well. So if you're using the combination of Facebook pages and MailChimp e-news, maybe you want to have people give people the ability to subscribe to your e-news right there on your Facebook page, and the details are available.
Very good.
Yep. And shifting gears to another bonus Wells Tech Goodness episode, BWTG on web image editing, which was just released this past Monday. Martin, you took a look at using Picnic for some basic image editing for your website, and I actually posted a tweet and said, you know, that we were talking about Picnic, and I used their Twitter name in my tweet, and they responded, which was really cool to have a conversation with Twitter, via Twitter with Picnic, I should say. And basically, Picnic had to say this about our BWTG episode. They said, great Picnic tutorials, very clear, thanks for sharing.
Cool.
So there's the official word. You got Picnic's blessing on
your
video tutorial, so good job there. Good.
Glad it wasn't a takedown notice or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's always positive.
That's right.
All right. Next up, we heard from Alyssa Dunning, who works in our web services area there at the Senate Administration Building, and she sent us a really neat article about registering with Google Maps. So you actually have like a business type presence in the Google Maps system, and you can actually put some information about your church or school that will be posted within Google Maps. So we'll include a link to that in our show notes. There's a little video introduction about how it all works and links and things to get started registering with Google Maps. And let's see, next up, we had a little bit of feedback from Jim Gates. Jim Gates writes a blog called Tipline, which is Gates Computer Tips. And he's someone I've been following for quite a while, so to actually hear from him I thought was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned him in last week's show as being someone who wasn't fond of the concept of Twitter in the classroom, kind of a balance to a comment that I think Jason Schmidt had shared a link to using Twitter in the classroom. Mr. Gates had posted a blog that, you know, was kind of like, I'm not sure this would be a great idea to use Twitter in the classroom. So he wrote to give us some clarification on his comments. He said, I think there's lots of reasons why it's a problem, from creating accounts and having to follow each other to the notion that it's difficult to archive.
Right.
I think there's better options, which is basically kind of a private Twitter called Chatsy and Backnoise. And they give your class the ability to have that background conversation, but in a safer environment.
Right.
So definitely some alternatives to Twitter. What's funny is after he wrote to us, which was like the day after he had posted this blog post or whatever, he went on to blog kind of a different view, because he got a massive amount of response to his anti-Twitter in the classroom blog post, and eventually he kind of said, maybe I'm wrong. And his blog post was titled, Perhaps I Stand Corrected. And so we'll include a link to that, because now he's rethinking that concept, and maybe Twitter in the classroom is something that he's willing to at least consider and that kind of thing. So interesting food for thought on using Twitter in the classroom.
I mean, Twitter, as we talked about in past shows, is just a locomotive that's going to run you over whether you want it to or not. And that's where people are. You see it absolutely everywhere. It's on every TV show, every news broadcast, every magazine. They all have Twitter accounts, and that's where the people are. So that might be the place where our educators need to take a look and, you know, how to leverage those tools.
Right. And, you know, just a great example that we have a conversation with Picnic. I don't think I could have a conversation with Picnic that easily without Twitter being in place.
They wouldn't even know. They wouldn't have even known you were talking about them.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So cool stuff. Okay. Moving on, we heard from Pastor David Ernest, who's at Gloria Day in Tinley Park, Illinois. I think that's a Chicago suburb, maybe.
Yes, it is. I believe it's on the south side.
Okay. And he had a great question, I thought, one that a lot of people might be interested in. His question had to do with posting his email address on a website. So basically publicizing your email address on the web. And his concern is that once you do that, you're opening yourself up to a lot of spam, because there's a lot of engines that crawl the web maliciously, basically, to look for those kind of addresses that are out there and to be able to spam them. And so, you know, he's asking, what can I do about this? Should I put my email address out there? How can I make it easy for people to contact me? And I had a couple of ideas, Martin. I'm not sure, you know, where you weigh in on that topic, but I've seen people basically camouflage their email address, not make it readable by those kind of engines, by kind of spelling it out. So mine would be tech trainer and then a space and then the word at, meaning the at sign, but spelling it out.
Right.
And then wells.dot.net. And so that it's all spelled out and it can't be just grabbed easily by these kind of mechanical engines that look for that kind of thing.
Yep.
My other piece of advice would be to go ahead and publicize it, but filter it through Gmail, because I love Gmail spam filtering.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can actually use your regular email address, but just route it through a Gmail account, and you'll actually get the good stuff in the Gmail account, and all the spam will be out of the way for you. So just a couple of ideas there.
I had two other thoughts. One would, if you're using most websites provide some kind of ability to create forms. So if you want people to communicate with you, just build a form that ultimately sends that email to your email address. So you have a from and a subject line and a body, text body message that they essentially fill out the form and hit submit. So that would be one way to hide the email address altogether from everybody if somebody wants to contact you through your website. The second is there are a lot of JavaScript kinds of things you could apply to actual email addresses on a page that makes them a little less spider or crawler friendly so that these bots don't come along and just automate the and suck them up and put you on a spam list. Just do a search for JavaScript mask emails or something like that. JavaScript masking email, something like that, and we'll put a link to one of those scripts in the show notes. But there's a bunch of them out there. Some of them do encryption, randomization. There's all kinds of tools that you can use in JavaScript. You just have to be able to get behind into the HTML code to implement these. And most hosting providers allow some kind of engine to or interface to allow you to do that. That's what we use on peacehartford.org. We have a JavaScript script running in the back. So it's definitely available on FinalWeb that essentially makes that email address, you can't be scammed that way. So you can't pull it off of there. So there's all kinds of solutions there.
Very good. Very good. All right. You added one comment here that I got a real kick out of from ExaTweet.
From our ExaTweet Twitter, that is actually code for Aaron Fry, Pastor Aaron Fry from Michigan, right?
Right.
I don't remember exactly. Tawa City, right. He's been on the show in the past talking about Logos software, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he tweeted, when Wells Tech talks about GTD and Mind Like Water, is it, and then he phonetically spells out sophroneo, which is a Greek word, that they're talking about. That was a question, in essence. And then he sends a link, which was kind of interesting. The link he sends is to it's not a real pithy URL here, perseus.tufts.edu/hopper/... It's basically a lexicon application. We should actually have him back on the show to explain exactly what this is. Because he embeds the link where he actually displays the word sophroneo, which means to be sound of mind. So essentially, I had to decipher the question first. And then the question is essentially, when we're talking about mind like water, when we talk about GTD, which we've talked about in the past, which is one of the things that they equate this state of readiness to be, is that equivalent to the Greek word to be sound of mind? So I guess the answer, Aaron, would be not exactly, but I love the question. To be sound of mind. Mind Like Water is actually a jiu-jitsu. Oh my gosh. Am I going to have to edit this out, Sally, or do we just go forward with my just total hack job on...
You know what? I'm married to a pastor geek like you guys are talking, and I just my response to ExaTweet was rolling eyes, and my husband would love this, you know. Oh, you don't have to edit it out. That's how it all sounds. That's just the way it is.
That's right. So for now, but basically that's a term that's used for a state of readiness where you're just at peace. You're comfortable with how you've got things under control, that as new things come in, you can receive that information gracefully and respond appropriately. So you have to refer back to our previous conversations on GTD to kind of get that.
Sure. But GTD, Aaron, is getting things done. It's organizational technique.
That's right. We got all kinds of acronyms here. Greek words. I don't know where to go from here.
Yeah. Hey, I've got some late-breaking community feedback.
Is that right?
Yep, you don't even know about this. So, this is really important stuff, and everybody needs to listen up, because yesterday I found a cool website called TrekYourself.com, and if you're a Trekkie,
T-R-E-K,
that's right, Star Trek fan, you can actually take your picture and turn yourself into a Romulan and have yourself say things on the web. So I did this with my computer camp yesterday, hands down the favorite thing that they've ever done in technology class, and it was just a load of fun. So if you're a Trekkie, take advantage of this late breaking Wells Tech.
You're gonna put the link in there?
Yep.
Trek yourself. Where's your picture?
Oh, no. We don't do that. Maybe I'll link to my son's, because he's a huge Romulan
fan. Oh, yeah.
So,
okay.
Fun stuff.
If I do it, will you?
Nope. Sorry. You go right ahead, Martin. Use your iPhone. Take a picture. See, I don't have one of those.
I could do it in panoramic mode even.
There you go.
This is getting scary. All right. What are we doing next week here before we just totally, I think we're totally off the tracks at this point. Mayday, mayday.
Two shows coming up next week. Our bonus Wells Tech Goodness is going to focus on creating a custom RSS feed that you control, links to things that you want to share with your congregation or on your school website or whatever. And we're using Delicious to do that. So tune in. It's a great concept. I'm real excited about it. And then our regular show next Wednesday will focus on technology at Synod Convention, because all of a sudden, Synod Convention is upon us, and you're going to be there, Martin, and you're going to give us a rundown on what we can expect as far as technology.
I'm bringing all kinds of technology.
We're looking forward to hearing about it.
Very good. All right. I think we've done enough damage here, Sally. Why don't we close the show with the music of Revelation? Jeremy Bakken actually has a connection with this group. He leads the group at Wisconsin Lutheran College, or did lead. I'm not sure if he does anymore or not. But Such Joy is the name of their song from their album We Walk By Faith. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.